Greetings and welcome to the iFormRx podcast, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, and I'm the host of the iFormRx podcast. Poor medication adherence and medication taking behaviors is among the most common reasons why treatments don't achieve their intended benefits. And ambulatory care and community pharmacists are uniquely qualified to assist patients achieve optimal adherence to their medications. Of course, slavish adherence to a medication regimen that isn't appropriate for the patient or which causes adverse effects can lead to poor outcomes as well. So it's important to keep in mind that efforts to improve medication adherence should only be considered after conducting a comprehensive medication review and determining that the regimen is appropriate. Now, there are many reasons why patients don't achieve optimal adherence, such as the patient's beliefs about the potential benefits and risks and harms, the complexity of the regimen, and the patient's ability to develop new habits and routines. Cost is another barrier, and even modest copays can be difficult to afford for some patients. And that's why the CleanMed study, published in JAMA, Internal Medicine, in January 2020, caught my eye because the investigators eliminated copays to determine if free access to essential medications improved adherence. And joining me today to discuss the CleanMeds study are Emily Eddy, Brittany Long, and Lindsay Peters from the Ohio Northern University in Ada, Ohio. Dr. Eddy practices at Uptown Pharmacy, a community pharmacy in Westerville, Ohio. Dr. Long practices at ONU HealthWise on their mobile clinic bus. And Dr. Peters practices at St. Rita Medical Center in Lima, Ohio. Well, Emily, Brittany, Lindsay, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
Stuart, thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here today.
I'm so excited to discuss the topic. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Now, before we get started, I want you to imagine you work for a staff model health maintenance organization like Kaiser Permanente, for example. And today, BC, a 53-year-old African-American male, has an appointment with you for a routine blood pressure follow-up visit. The patient has a long-standing history of high blood pressure. He is also overweight, but is otherwise healthy. He reports no personal history of cardiovascular disease, but states that his older brother has kidney problems and his mother died at age 61 from a heart attack. The patient currently takes Esalsartan 80 milligrams daily, indapamide 2.5 milligrams daily, Felodipine 10 milligrams daily, and last week he was started on spironolactone 25 milligrams once daily. He currently weighs 238 pounds and his BMI is 34.5. His blood pressure today, measured by the intake nurse, is 152 over 84. As you look through his chart, you note that his electrolytes were all within normal limits about 2 weeks ago, but his estimated GFR was 38 mils per minute. 6 months ago, his A1C was 5.2, and his cholesterol panel was LDL of 96, and HDL of 52, and triglycerides of 107. So, Emily, before we talk about the study you reviewed in your commentary, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the things going through your mind in this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point?
Yes, Stuart. The first thing that we were interested in when looking at BC was his hypertension. In this case, his reading was 152 over 84. And the first thing that came to mind was how valid and accurate that reading was. We don't know if it was measured correctly, so I would want to assess whether or not his feet were on the ground while the measurement was taken, whether or not he'd had any caffeine recently. We'd also want to make sure the correct cuff size was used and that he was properly resting prior to the measurement being taken. We'd also want to talk about self-monitoring with BC to make sure that if this is a trend in his blood pressure or if this is just a one-time elevated reading. Once we've identified whether or not the blood pressure was measured correctly, the next thing we would want to assess would be his adherence to his current medication regimen. There are a couple questions that come to mind that we could ask him. For example, how many days a week does he miss his current medications? And if he does miss them, what prohibits him from taking his medications? We could also consider the use of some adherence measures, like the Murawski Medication Adherence Scale, that remains one of the most widely utilized adherence tools that we could consider. Once we've talked to this patient about his blood pressure readings and his adherence, there are a couple other things that came to mind in relation to his hypertension. The first thing was looking at the classes of medications that he is on for his blood pressure. He is on first-line classes of medications for his blood pressure treatment. We did notice that he is on some brand-name medications. He is on once-daily medications. We also did note that he is not on any combination products currently, and so that could come into play, though he is on max doses of a lot of his medications. We'd also want to think about his overall cardiovascular disease risk and how we can optimize that. We did calculate his ASCVD risk, and it put him into an intermediate category, so we would want to assess his additional risk-enhancing factors, such as his CRP or coronary artery calcium, to really further tease out what his risk for cardiovascular disease is. We could also discuss initiating a moderate intensity statin with this patient if he was willing, especially given some of his family history. The other things we'd like to talk about with him are potentially weight loss, diet and exercise, and ways that we might be able to optimize those. There are some labs to also consider for this patient. He was recently started on spironolactone, so we could consider getting a serum potassium for him. If we did decide to initiate a statin, we could also measure some baseline LFTs. We could also consider measuring an A1C again. It has been 6 months since his last A1C was taken, and so that could be a consideration for him. We did also note that his GFR was only 38 2 weeks ago, and so we would want to continue to monitor that and consider that if we make any medication changes.
So, Lindsay, let's talk about the results of the study you reviewed for iFormRx. The paper was published online in January 2020 in JAMA Internal Medicine, and it's entitled Effect on Treatment Adherence of Distributing Essential Medicines at No Charge, the Clean Meds Randomized Clinical Trial. For those in our audience who haven't read the paper, can you give us a brief summary of the analysis and its major findings?
So as you mentioned, medication adherence plays a large role in achieving positive patient health outcomes. And when these regimens are not followed, patients often fail to reach optimal disease control. And one of these potential barriers is definitely medication cost. So the Clean Meds randomized clinical trial was a multi-center, unblinded, parallel, two-group superiority trial that took place at 9 primary care centers in Ontario, Canada. The trial enrolled 786 patients who reported cost as a barrier to medication adherence. These patients were randomly allocated to either receive free medications from a list of 128 essential medications or their usual medicine access. Both of these were in addition to usual care. The primary outcome was adherence to medications that were appropriately prescribed over 12 months. Adherence was measured by using the lowest estimate from one of two ways, either the review of primary care records that showed prescription renewal intervals, or the patient report of the number of missed doses during the previous week. There were also some predefined secondary outcomes that were more clinically focused, such as hemoglobin A1C, LDL, and blood pressure. Baseline characteristics for both study groups were similar, and the results did show that distributing free essential medications from a pre-specified list statistically significantly improved medication adherence and lowered systolic blood pressure. There were also some non-statistically significant improvements in A1C and LDL. Also of note, there was no substantial difference between participants and the groups in terms of serious adverse events or other safety outcomes.
Well, Lindsay, now let's consider talking about some of the strengths and weaknesses of this study. Are there any potential confounders that you think might have influenced the results? And do you think the findings of the study can be broadly applied to other medication classes or perhaps to patients who receive care in other health systems?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And as we were evaluating the article, we found many strengths and limitations and potential confounders. So we'll start with the strengths. When assessing the impact of free medication distribution, we thought it was really novel that Canada was used as the setting of the trial. This is definitely a strength because physician care and hospitalizations are universally publicly funded there. So this will allow better insight into how eliminating the barrier of medication costs specifically will influence patient adherence. But on the flip side, the findings from this one high-income country should be applied cautiously in jurisdictions that have different healthcare services and different disease burdens. Another strength that we found was that the authors chose secondary endpoints that were more clinically focused, and this allowed for a broader picture of the effect of the free medication distribution. A final strength was the actual development of the essential medication list. The list was developed based on the 2013 World Health Organization model list of essential medicines, with input from Canadian prescribers, patients, and prescribing volume data. However, it is important to note that many of the common medications that we use in the U.S., such as lisinopril, losartan, metoprolol, these were not included on that list. So again, another reason to consider the generalizability of these results. There were a few limitations as well. One that we think is important is bias from the patients. You can imagine unblinded allocation of free medications could have motivated participants or patients to exaggerate their adherence or even result in different care from the clinicians who are caring for these patients. Additionally, the majority of free distribution medicines were provided through the mail, and previous literature has shown that this delivery route has greater medication adherence rates. Some of the limitations we noted were in regards to the outcome measures chosen, trying to find the most accurate adherence results. As we all know, there is no gold standard for the measure of medication adherence. Although we do like that they chose secondary outcomes that were more clinically focused, there are other factors that can influence these outcomes, such as diet, exercise, lifestyle choices, and these factors were not accounted for. And finally, the authors did not measure patient adherence at baseline, and that could easily and directly impact the primary outcome measure of adherence.
Well, Brittany, I know there have been other studies that have examined the relationship between adherence and medication cost. Are the results of this study consistent with findings from previous studies? And relative to other causes of poor adherence, is cost a major factor or a relatively minor one?
So I think those are great questions, Stuart. As you mentioned, there have been many studies that have looked at adherence, that have looked at cost, and many other factors as well. And that's because non-adherence to medications has been shown to not only be a problem in the United States, but really worldwide. Different reviews have found that when looking at developed countries, the average adherence rate is only around 50% for treatments of chronic disease states such as hypertension and diabetes, which the Clean Meds trial looked at. Outside of cost, studies have shown many modifiable and non-modifiable factors contribute to non-adherence, including low health literacy, patient forgetfulness, complexity of the regimen, side effects, psychosocial concerns, and patient belief systems, in addition to medication cost. So I guess at this point, what we would say is that there's not really enough robust evidence to determine if the cost is truly the most important barrier to medication adherence or not. In our opinion, though, it is certainly a significant barrier and one that we have seen repeatedly in clinical practice. I think one thing to keep in mind is really the relativity of cost. $5 a month, for example, for a patient may be considered a barrier to some, but not a problem at all for other patients. While I've also seen patients pay upwards of $500 a month for prescriptions without it being a problem at all. What's most important is to identify properly for the individual patients what their barriers are to their medication adherence. And then as a pharmacist and as a healthcare team, really work to find both a viable and a sustainable solution, which may or may not include costs.
So let's return to our patient case. Emily, let's assume that BC has expressed some concern about the cost of his medications. While he states that he can afford them, the copays, he says, are, quote, pretty hard to swallow. What should we do? Are there any medication changes that you can make to reduce his copays?
Yes, when thinking back at BC, I think there are several ways that we could help him in lowering his overall cost of his healthcare. One thing we could think to do would be to switch his brand name medications to generic versions in that same class. They are likely to have lower copays and reduce his costs. Another thing we could do would consider the use of combination pills that might allow for single copays that might be cheaper than him having to pay for several copays. Also, we could consider maximizing doses of his medications as well as trying to eliminate some of them. We could also discuss lifestyle modifications with this patient that may or may not have been tried in the past, which might be able to lower his blood pressure and ultimately lower his pill burden. We could also think interprofessionally and utilize social workers, case managers, or other resources in the community. Another thing we need to think about for BC is his overall healthcare costs. This patient is navigating the US healthcare system, which was slightly different than this study. We would want to think of ways we could minimize his overall cost of things like lab visits and provider visits by streamlining and minimizing those that aren't needed.
Well, Brittany, let's consider what your health system might be able to do. Should your HMO consider adopting a no copay policy for all patients who are taking medications that are deemed essential? Or should the copay be income-based, whereby some patients with limited incomes can receive essential medicines at no cost?
Yeah, you know, as far as who to provide medications for at no cost or on an income-based plan, I don't think we have the complete answer to that yet. Perhaps researchers may identify a right patient or a right patient population in which the provision of free medications is most beneficial in improving the adherence. The CLEAN trial wasn't designed to identify which patients would benefit most from medications given at no cost. A follow-up study that is looking at cost-effectiveness of this intervention is underway, and the information from this study will likely help us know if providing essential medications free is a cost-effective intervention. So at this time, we don't feel that we have enough data to determine which patients should receive medications at no cost or reduced cost, or potentially which medications to provide.
Emily, Brittany, Lindsay, I want to thank you all for joining me today to discuss the treatment of hypertension and other chronic diseases and how medication cost is a potential barrier to treatment. I think it's clear from your comments that providing medications at no cost, at least to patients who perceive costs as a potential barrier to them receiving treatment, is potentially a viable way to improve medication adherence and perhaps to improve outcomes. Of course, we need more data and we need cost-effectiveness studies to truly understand what the benefits might be. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free, so sign up today. And by the way, if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist, you should check out the board recertification program offered by the American Pharmacists Association. We've partnered with APHA to make iFormRx commentaries and podcasts available for board recertification and continuing education credit. To learn more about APHA's Ambulatory Care Board Prep and Recertification Program, click on the link at the bottom of the written commentary posted on the iFormRx website. Lastly, a special thanks to the many volunteers who make iFormRx possible. A big shout out to Kristen Reeser, who is an ambulatory care pharmacy specialist at St. Vincent in Indianapolis, Indiana. Kristen completed her PGY2 ambulatory care residency here at the University of Mississippi a few years ago and has continued to contribute to iFormRx in several meaningful ways over the past 4 years, including authoring and reviewing commentary. So thank you, Kristen, for volunteering your time and talent. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.